Namaskar. Welcome to the sixth episode of Satya Samvad. Corruption is bankrolling with moral bankruptcy. In ancient Bharat, Acharya Chanakya spoke against more than 40 ways of embezzlement, such as fabrication of revenue records and embezzling of funds. Corruption, like termite, eats away at the very structure it infects, and it seems to be ubiquitous in the contemporary world. With demonetization and GST, the Union government has sought to reduce corruption. While demonetization helped with reducing the size of the shadow economy by enlarging the formal economy, the gross GST revenue crossed rupees 20 lakh crores in 2023-24 with an 11.7% growth. Unfortunately, modern democracy across the world is often a destructive game of self-interests. We see a world where governance and politics gets mixed up. Welfare has become a means to win elections, just as altruism is often undertaken by a few to accrue blessings. The classic political expediency versus strong policy debate has restarted around the general election season, and it is all about who wants to truly serve the nation with integrity and courage without corruption and self-centered politicking. What needs to be done is to empower the citizens of the country to have more stakeholdership in the democratic process and the governance of the country without the concentration of power in what can only be construed as newer feudalistic structures that still unofficially persist, whereby patronage and clout are of more significance than even the law in places. As we move into the election season to discuss all of this and more, we have with us again, Sri Somashekhar ji. We welcome you, sir.
What's it?
So, sir, our Prime Minister says that this election is a fight between those who are against corruption and others who support corruption. The Aam Aadmi Party was formed by members of the India Against Corruption movement with a mission to make Bharat corruption-free. I understand that you were also at the forefront of the Anna Hazare campaign at that time. However, today we see the Enforcement Directorate having put the Chief Minister of Delhi, Arvind Kejriwal, in jail. Citizens were fed up of the slew of corruption scams by the UPA regime in 2014, and demand for Jan Lokpal had reached a feverish pitch around that time. Ironically, both Arvind Kejriwal and Congress seem to be on the same side as we speak. How serious is this issue?
See, basically, when corruption ruled the roost, those particular times when you had seen, we went through a very, very bad patch. Once in, previously in 1990, when we had to pledge gold to save our economy, that was a very bad patch. But later on, when things picked up, every opportunity of making money was a means. You had a Commonwealth Games, which is an opportunity. See, the recent comparison is the G20. How the Prime Minister converted the G20 into something very unique. And he gave to the world the idea how a conglomerate of countries can cooperate and how the G20, the way, in fact, we can discuss one day about the G20 itself, how he shaped it up beautifully and brought in Africa also as a thing into the G20. That time, the Commonwealth Games was an opportunity. It was a beautiful opportunity thrown upon Delhi to develop Delhi to a magnificent effect. Unfortunately, they made money out of that. Very poor products were put into that whole thing. It blew up and it became a very big scam. Subsequently, 2G auctions. You know, there was a compulsion of coalition. And Congress Party, unfortunately, in this country, which ruled the thing, it was the single most majority party all the years. So they did not know how to handle a coalition. They were so hell-bent on being superior party and big brotherly attitude that they were forced to come, they were compelled to coalition politics of total compromise. So they would not interfere. There were plenty of, the misgovernance, policy paralysis, everything you found in the 10 years. That's what Prime Minister keeps comparing and quoting. See, for example, in that particular year, if I tell you, you'd be shocked. These are not published in public domain, but a lot of us who follow political scene in India know about it. For example, one minister in Tamil Nadu from the DMK, he did not know anything to read or write. So he had a language problem. And, you know, he was asked to handle chemical and fertilizer ministry. He hardly visited the ministry. The whole term, he did not visit the ministry at all. He hardly signed papers. And if you say, okay, that was an obsolete kind of a ministry, nothing much impact could have been. No. Subsequent change, they brought in Anand Kumar into that. You know, look at the transformation. Anand Kumar brought in patent of neem on fertilizers. There's a huge kind of a development where fertilizers, by doing that, the entire diversion of, and, you know, misuse of fertilizers was stopped. It is the very same ministry which handles pharmaceuticals. And look at what has happened. This Jana Aushadhi Kendras, which is in the country, which gives 30% reduction in prices to the common man, was done during that time. So I'm just giving you a small thing to compare how a ministry that could do wonders was nothing could be done. Then you had a telecommunication minister there who had 160 exchanges in his house, in telecom telephones, which is under investigation. Still it's going on, nothing of that. You had a 2G minister who made mincemeat of the auction and he completely, and if he had gone, imagine in the 2G, 3G, 4G, now we are coming into this 6G generation. He could have made miserable things happen. So when it went to the heights, the zenith, beyond this and nothing more, people could not tolerate. So capturing that, there are two people in Maharashtra. One was Annahazare and Atnotikar. He was also one of the very popular administrators and public figure who fought against corruption. So they wanted a face, they took another. So we are all at the forefront. Something had to be done to the nation. And it was a beautiful movement. India Against Corruption was definitely a movement which captured the imagination of the public. But nobody knew Arvind Kejriwal had some hidden agenda in this thing. He took the lead because he was in Delhi. He was very well placed. But nobody knew at the back of his mind, he had such a large game plan, you know, to take away, to hijack the whole plan. Therefore, when it came to the height, when it reached the climax, at that point of time, the Congress never imagined what could happen. The Congress was really in a dilemma. Because the who is who of society, our Hegde, who was the Lokayukta, one of the leading, Santosh Hegdeji, who was the leading light of the Lokayukta movement. Dr. Kiran Bedi, former chief of the army staff, G.K. Singh, Admiral Ramdas, you name them, all of them were there. The best of people who wished this country should not go into the thing, sort of a freedom movement. And we all gathered together. They could not diffuse the whole thing. They did so many kind of internalizing. It came to such a pass that second time when Annahazare sat for hunger strike, we were all very peeved. We were all tensed up. Whether it came to the point that Congress was not willing to give up. And that time, it came almost to the extent of the health of the Annahazare. Then some compromises had to be worked out, and opposition also. The people like Arun Jaitley, Sushma Swaraj got together. Negotiations were done. And then it was resolved. But in that movement, during that time, you know, one of these, Digvijay Singh, made a passing remark. He threw a challenge to Arvind Kejriwal. Running government is not easy. Come to politics, you will know. So having done this, perhaps, who knows, Arvind Kejriwal took it as an opportunity, in spite of the fact that I remember Anna Hazare had told him, no, don't get into politics. Don't do this thing. But he didn't hear. A lot of things he started breaking, and which public is also already aware. And so it diverted, and today it is where it is. See, the one thing that happens is people become headlong. When you have this thing, ego takes over. And power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. You see, nobody anticipated that a person who amongst us, I've had a one-on-one discussion with Arvind Kejriwal. One-on-one discussion when he came saying. And I happened to tell him about the ration and other public distribution system. I exchanged views in Bangalore in 1982 when that particular ADR meeting was held in IIM Bangalore. So anyway, that's all a part of history. But what happened was he could generate, or he could be a force multiplier with ideas to take the movement on. But who, nobody diverted. I remember a particular anecdote I would like to share with you. Perhaps it is akin to that. You know, in the student days when we are there, we have that josh. We wanted to do something in the thing. I come from the school of St. Joseph. So St. Joseph is supposed to be a very reputed institution. And student union, all this kind of the thing, you know, be on the forefront. So some people inside the college, they had political ideologies and movements extra outside the college kind of this. So they were in touch with political parties. So when we had some problem in the college and we tried to organize some protest or something, this chap, very cleverly what he did is, made use of the opportunity, took us to the street. He made us get into the street, said shouting, going down. What started at the gate has something to do with the college. It became camouflaged outside and they said, down, price rise. It started, you know, we're condemning price rise. We got nothing to do with that. So it was captured. And ultimately, next day, Decanerol, flash came the thing that students are agitating against price rise. That was not the intention. That was hijacked. Somebody had the thing, and we had to apologize. A lot of internal, the thing, parents were called. A lot of things happened. This is similar to that. We never anticipated that this movement will culminate into another rugged political discourse. What to do, it had happened. Anyway, he's facing the tune is another view, because even after the PMLA Act, as I told you, his ego is so high that one, he's an income tax officer. His wife is an income tax officer. Two, that he had left the popular movement, the whole of India. He was popular. You might be knowing that he contested against Prime Minister Narendra Modi in Varanasi, thinking that he can defeat him. In that whole hawa, he thought he will defeat Narendra Modi. He had that kind of an ambition. What happened is all history. Now, during that particular time, when he was, you know, having a kind of lot of this particular thing, money started pouring in initially from foreign sources also. People started leaving their job by what he was trying to sell, a dream. And people came and settled down. Even in Bangalore, there are people who worked abroad and came and settled down with an intention to do some social work. They're all stranded. That's a different thing. Now, when you give a person all that he spoke, every word that he spoke, he has turned around. A person, 9 times he has been given a summons and he has not answered. And everything he tried to convert into political thing And automatically what he's facing today is of his own making. And this will doom the party itself. It is not, see, activism, civil society, activism is different. You stay apart, nothing happens to you. You are passionate to your cause. You work for the cause. Today, I am in the civil society movement. I should be very careful. I cannot assume or presume when a lot of people are following me. The leadership has to be all right, sincere, upright and all that. I know how difficult it is to run an organization 50 years old. But you have no responsibility. You do whatever you want and you expect people to follow. That is what happened with Arvind Kejriwal. Unfortunate, he will have a major setback. Nothing can be hidden now. And as you rightly started with an introduction, and that is the introduction that is very, very important because they had not appointed the previous government deliberately. They had not appointed an SIT chief, special investigation team, appointed by the Supreme Court to go into the corruption, the thing. Nobody was appointed as a chief. Nothing could be done, even in spite of the Supreme Court saying that. The first job that was done by the new government when Narendra Modi took over in 2014 was to appoint as a thing. Justice Shah was appointed as the SIT chief. The first thing. Then, you know, getting Swiss bank accounts, secret kind of the thing, put into a cover, given to the government, all that had happened. The pace at which this could not be followed up is because even the judicial system, there is a lot of, too much of the thing. You know, that particular system they believe that even one innocent should not be the thing, should not be victimized in case this thing happens. So they go by the philosophy that maximum this thing is given. And a lot of misuse is done based on that. So now slowly things are catching up. It's a longish time. The government has to look on a fast track basis. And let me tell you, in ultimately, the most important thing that is in this election, like what the Prime Minister rightly flagged off, is corruption. If this nation improves on corruption, it will lead, leaps and bounds can be achieved. We'll be nuts there. And having said that, let me also be very, you're saying, very careful in telling you, we are not the whole of the world. We are not the only corrupt country. Okay, let's be very clear. America is also equally corrupt. And they are now vying for two corrupt presidents. Donald Trump is facing that kind of a thing now that about corruption and yet willing to, trying to come back. So that is for US to whether we should be compared to having corruption or the beauty is the best thing that could have happened to India is that we have a prime minister who leads from Brent, who says, I am not corrupt. Come on, you follow me. Nobody has the dare or the courage to overtake him or to be corrupt. When he says, I'm not corrupt, nobody has the wherewithal to be a corrupt in that system. So the top corruption is less. And let me share with you one private discussion of one top level administrative officer. He told me that in Delhi, everybody fears, not that he says, mind you, because of the top, not that there is no corruption. There will be delay, there will be this thing. However much the Prime Minister does that. But there is a chase that is happening. People know that he's after them and they'll fix. So it is very succinctly done. Corruption is not completely a thing. It needs a lot to be done, which is happening now. So I think this country is poised for a stronger, vibrant the thing, we will be able to reduce the corruption, may not be able to eradicate it for some time to come.
Right, sir. And I think there are a few points here which are of importance. One is, of course, that of the manner in which platforming happens, or rather, you know, pertinent points or points that are of relevance to the people are often utilized for, you know, moving into power and consolidating power. So it's not only in India, as you rightly said, but even if you look at, you know, modern history or even medieval history, for that matter, even the ancient past, we have had multiple revolutions, for instance, which have had a certain manner of happening, right, in Europe, for instance, and a few other places. And they went in a very different direction once the people kind of got to power. I mean, the French Revolution comes to mind, of course. And then you have the Russian Revolution as well, and various other such incidences. Now, the point that comes to mind, or the question that must be addressed, is that it is something inherent to possibly the primal instincts that humans have, which is obviously greed for one, right? And a certain manner of insecurity about power, as well as various other elements which are out there. So as, I mean, we are now striving towards seeking to be Vishwaguru, or, you know, leading the way, civilizationally speaking, with the values that we espouse. How do you see us kind of moving in a direction whereby this ubiquitous kind of element of power grabbing, of power consolidation, right, which is done with deceit in mind, right? Because especially when it comes to democracy, it is very difficult to have vivekam, which is discernment, right, or discrimination between who comes with what kind of intent. So obviously in the UK, for instance, there's a movement which is to do with more participatory democracy, right, where it is issue based essentially, and people have more of a say. There is also the demand for the right to recall, right? When you have the right to take back a certain candidate or a certain elected representative, if they are going against the broader kind of consensus of the people. So there are such kind of aspects that are going on the political side. But if one were to kind of decentralize it and bring it to the individual, how do you see us as a nation, as a civilization, possibly leading the way in the direction of a decentralized movement against corruption?
Brought up two things. One is, in between you said right to recall. That means amendment to the Representation of People's Act has to be done. So that brings us to the point that there is reforms required in the election process, which is the first thing. We have come a very long way from the way the elections are conducted. And I can definitely tell you in confidence, because I've studied a lot of countries' election process and all. And India stands out as number one in conducting elections, really, in a democratic, in the most democratic, equal kind of an opportunity. Immediately, if I were in a panel discussion, some four people would have jumped on. The issue is simple. You see a kind of reforms that we have silently brought up inside the election machinery. From the time that booths were being captured, you don't find any booths being captured now. You don't find proxy voting, massive proxy voting. It is very interesting to hear today in one of the candidates in Hyderabad, who is contesting against one of the very prominent four times MP. I'm shocked. She was revealing that almost 4 to 5 lakh votes are cast every time to that gentleman proxy. And how did he do that? He says he has corporators who are having the election booth in their house. They conduct the election booth inside their house. And she has been picked up. Now she is the candidate of the BJP anyway. Now she is bold enough to challenge the whole system. Now, proxy voting will evaporate. Electoral identity. Everybody has an epic card. And mind you, again, let this go into the people who are saying this. Election Commission does not have its own staff. It does not, it conducts election in a country. This itself will be a PhD for students. The Election Commission does not have, it has a minimal staff into that. It depends on the corporation during the election and during various kind of things. It depends on other departments to conduct its affairs. And what a marvelous way they have conduct. You know, you can't conduct during festivals. And festivals are dime a dozen. Plenty of the thing. Different religions, different regions, different kind of thing. Local, national, every other. They should see that the election date does not coincide during that. They should see whether the monsoon and other kind of things do not happen during that particular time. They should see that the manpower is available for movement of security everywhere. Maximum security, where they require security. It's a huge exercise. And that exercise, the way they have accomplished, one by one, the AP card, to avoid proxies, booth capturing, completely off. Then they have introduced the electronic voting machine. The kind of the thing, how they have stifled the people who wanted to grab power, the way they have tackled this particular issue, how beautifully they have done. And independently, it is subject to scrutiny of the courts. They attributed and all that, let's keep politics aside. 40 to 42 times the opposition has gone to the court. They have produced it in the court. The court has, of late, has done a very good thing that enough is enough. If you go to the court, they will fine you 50,000 rupees. Now, no more all this halawala, making fun, cannot happen. There has to be a limit. That means what? They have achieved the ultimate of proving that this is a scientific method of doing elections quickly. Now, that is done. So, what else is left? The giving of money, that they are closely watching the distribution of money, purchase of votes, they have done beautifully. I am part of that particular thing that is done with the civil society. I participate. That is why I am saying this. That is why of late, if you find, voting percentages have gone up. 60-70% is the voting percentage in most of the areas. I think it could be more. But still efficiency in terms of deaths and other kind of, if they weed off, I think the percentage would be maximum. Now, with all this, ultimately comes back to one particular thing that happened. They have perfected the election system. Money power, already 1,500 crores has been seized. In this election, 1,500 crores. Movement of money during this particular time is very closely watched. You are not allowed to bring around, and yet they will play around. Cookers are distributed. I know about it. Certain things will be done. They will find ways and means. But I am trying to tell you that it is subdued. Totally, it will be caught. Ultimately, what? Having found, you look at the way they are struggling. Those who wanted to do it and who wanted to come into the public domain through wrong means. They are now saying, introducing freebies. The freebies, they wanted to catch the imagination of the people. That within the law, which is not forbidden, they are slowly pushing it in. 200 thing, five guarantees, all that. Even for that, the Supreme Court heard it. Election committee, they appointed a committee. We filed an intervening petition supporting the government in the Supreme Court. We said freebies is nothing but typically like in the consumer. If a product is not good, to either give you an incentive, additional 27%, 25%, to push that. So this has to be avoided. We made a very strong precedent. And it was accepted by the Supreme Court. Supreme Court thought, we are also some people who will want to enter and take some publicity and all that. So they asked our, verified our credible credentials. And they allowed us. And in the petition, our this thing is there. So coming back, we have perfected the electoral reform. Now, what is required to be done in this thing is, after getting elected, how the people, how the people shifting parties are to be stopped. That particular thing, if it happens, which we are coming up to that, then I think the nation would have done basic foundation of a democratic system. Once this is handled, the other things automatically become easy. For example, the parties don't submit a thing. Once upon a time, I remember 30 years back, you just have to decide, Dr. Mruthyunjaya will get a ticket. You can straight away go file it. You can't do it today. You have to have a portal. You have to fill up a lot of forms, affidavits and all that, declarations. Now, it's being introduced. It may be easier now. They'll start tightening it up. Once the system becomes tight and alert, once they start taking action on some of the affidavits and things which are provided, then our electoral system, if it is improved on this basis, then probably that's why the Congress has already declared in its manifesto, we will revert back to the old system, which is not going to happen for obvious reasons. I'm just suggesting, shows where the thing is. So we have a perfectly nice electoral system that we can tell the world about. It is one of the best systems that in the world. So there are reforms that are happening. Not that everything is thing. And we are pioneers where they can benchmark our achievement. We can be quoted upon. They can, people, if they start studying it, they can follow us. So this is happening. But it has to happen. It has to happen also simultaneously with the will to make it happen. If your intention is bad, if you don't want that country to improve, if you don't have the objective of, you know, improving the quality of life of the citizens, then obviously God save our country. Nothing can be done. When we were talking, I was part of a discussion day before yesterday on quality of standards and quality of experience by the telecom providers. How the telecom services, the broadcasting, TRAI has included a consultation paper already twice circulated. They've done enough. Now, it came to open house. You know, all the service providers, they were finding all kinds of problems to see that the level at which this particular restrictions or the authority's position goal has to be brought down. So if you don't have a pure intention, intention to serve, intention to do ethical kind of work, you'll find all this. So that ethics actually is the character that one has to imbibe in the nation. And that character building is very, very important for this country. And that has to come through the mass education. That's the education system itself is undergoing a transformation. No? National education policy has come. It'll happen.
That's a very important point, because that's exactly what I was trying to kind of bring the discussion around to, the decentralization of and giving the agency to the individual to kind of be part of this movement away from corruption, from various kinds of malpractices. And I think we've come a long way from, you know, scientific rigging, which happened in the times of the CPM in West Bengal. And we had a previous discussion on Satya Samvad on the same as well, or at least touching upon some of the aspects of that, to scientific organization of elections, which are so robust and resilient to various kinds of malpractices. Now, switching from the values and ethos in political kind of electoral dynamics towards little more towards the market, towards the economic aspect. GST is one of the major reforms in India that the Union government is credited with. One nation, one indirect tax for goods and services. Whereas the Congress has opposed it, with Rahul Gandhi even rebuking it as gabber tax. And they have stated in their manifesto that they would like to replace the present version with a version 2.0, which has still not been kind of fleshed out. So it's not very clear as to what they mean by saying that they want a version 2.0. As a professional well-versed with handling central excise and customs, what do you feel about it?
A very interesting subject, where apart from the outer view of the particular tax, technical, all that, I can tell you hands-on experience in this particular field, since all my life, I have handled only direct and indirect tax in corporates. So, having handled corporate tax in all this thing, in fact, my position was in a Tata company was statutory compliance. I was in the audit. I wanted to share with you, even here, the way the country in the GST. GST is an epoch-making reform, and it is wonderfully achieved. Whether you like or dislike or whatever you want to say, this government has done certain things that are, you know, that are milestones. So one of the milestones that I will really flag it off is, like one of the demonetization you said, that I'm willing to debate it. I have debated it in many TV panel shows. I have stood alone. I was the opposite of everybody attacking. I don't mind. This is one subject which interests me a lot and to share with you. Maximum corruption in the country has been in this particular segment. If I tell you, we ought to know that in this particular thing, right from the time when the taxes happen, I will not repeat something which I told you earlier. When the taxes happen, you know, British system, 1st of April used to be the day the demand, in fact, if you go into the history of preparation of the budget day, you'd be shocked to know that till 2014, we followed exactly the British era. Our budgets were presented at 5 o'clock in the evening. At 5 o'clock in the evening. If you think of that, why is that 5 o'clock in the evening? It is when the Queen that particular time, when the budget was presented, it had to be there. And we continued with it. So, from that system onwards, till this particular time, everything is particular. What they used to do is very interesting. I'll go into the practicals of it, not wasting my time into other kind of things. We used to close everything on 31st of March. 31st of March, 1st of March is the budget. 28th February, the last day, was called as the pre-budget day. On the pre-budget day, what they used to do is, there is a fiat by the Central Excise Department that on 1st of March, till the taxation, everything happens, no transaction will be done. There will be totally, every manufacturer will have to wait after announcement and all that. And what do they have to do now? Those days, no computers. No, I mean, minimal at least later on. What they used to do is on the pre-budget day, the entire stocks in a factory has to be declared to the Central Excise Department. You have to declare the whole stocks. And sometimes, for want of manpower or whatever, the department used to send its people to even come and check the stocks. The stocks vary, then you are caught, you are punished. From the total control of the this thing in the Inspector Raj to lobbying in the government. This happens on one side. There is to be huge industrialists, big time industrialists. They will lobby with the government to see that they get tax cuts. And I'm willing to challenge it publicly that some clever industries, what they used to do is, they used to literally write down how the tax has to be so that it will not be applicable to any other company but this. Beautifully written. It used to be worded in such a way, description, contours, everything. That's how this country was being ruled for several years. From that, you have, look, imagine this. It's called, when the goods leave the factory, it is called the factory gate sale. From the time there used to be a central excise inspector sitting in your factory, you used to have at the factory one small office. It has to pass through him. He has to approve. Obviously, corruption will be there. Then when the truck leaves the vehicle, imagine, practical. It is not a company which will do all this fraud. Individual, when preparing a gate pass or preparing something goes wrong. Absolutely room for corruption. So, from that time onwards to when the factory leaves, there used to be check posts. The check posts, you would have huge kind of vehicles standing there. Imagine the petrol, the time wasted, and corruption, massive corruption. Now, I'll tell you how the corruption also goes. A Tata company like that, which raises a Parka invoice, if it passes the checkpoint, that fellow says, "Cheek nahi, if you have given me this money, I will give you." Otherwise, hare kya hua? Chal to kya? So, what I am trying to say is, all this has been put an end. Today, you have one end, this thing. How beautiful it is. Imagine the country's transformation. Not only that, no checkpost, your e-way bills are coming up. Compliance is easy. Ease of living has increased manifolds. The manufacturer heaves a sigh of relief. There is a clear kind of a thing. nor products are now part of this exercise, except liquor and fuel. There is kept as a compromise. It is there inside the GST, but currently they have agreed, all of them, not to impose it because give some kind of leverage to the states, because still we don't have a prohibition policy in the entire country. We know, everybody knows this very clearly, because my friend Arvind Kejriwal is caught in the liquor gate. That is the only room where you can play around and get some money for other kind of purposes, like political and all that, corruption. So what happens there is, the entire thing has been neatly summarized, brought into one basket, and in that basket, you are allowed to trade in, making it very convenient. And today, countries like Tesla, Elon Musk, yesterday, day before today, he has spoken to Prime Minister. It is a USP. You can tell them, look, this is the way the country is, whether it is Kashmir to Kanyakumari. Now, I remember, there used to be huge kind of a thing for people in Karnataka to go to Puducherry, buy a vehicle and come here, because taxes are less there. Sales used to get boosted there, but not here. So all kinds of funny things used to happen. Now, putting it into one basket, the whole nation, 8 to 9 taxes, confusion, GST, CST, overtax, tax on tax, everything, to bring it in, to convince the entire political machinery to accept this on 1st of July 2017 is something phenomenal. Having worked in this, I just cannot imagine how could this be. Some compromises, some commitments were there that we'll compensate you, wait for some time, all that. But that was a very clever ploy. Not much here and there, percentages there, 15%, 14%, some compensations are being given. But that is beside the other thing. You know, this particular, this month, that is March, 11.5% is the increase in thing. And you mentioned, I think, 1.78 lakh crores, the highest GST has been collected. So you have plenty of amounts available for distribution. And most important thing that we keep harping on, we keep discussing, is about the democratic part of it. In the exercise itself, the mundane exercise, you know, huge kind of budget, tension, what my taxes are going to be, how I'm going to be budgeted tomorrow, that is removed from the public. And who decides the taxes? Nobody will find them, whatever political statements are loosely made. Effectively speaking, if you sit down in front of anybody, they cannot do anything because they are part of the decision process. The entire finance ministry in the country, whoever it be, they are all represented in taking decisions. And for a very long time, all decisions were taken unanimous. They were had to arrive at a consensus, unanimously the decisions were taken. Therefore, GST is one of the best things that could have happened. And credit must go to this Modi government for having brought about this. This, I tell you, if you ask any industrialist of the change that is brought in, I'll tell you, they will heave a very big sigh. Because topmost management, they were rattled. Some mistake happens, an inspector can come and haul them up, can abuse them. Those are things which I've seen happening. We used to feel bad, but that's how it is. All that is gone, the inspector Raj has gone, the freedom to work is there. You can produce, you can pay the taxes and come place. Now I wanted to mark, raise a small flag in my finishing remark. If in that case you are saying everything is very thing and completely honky-dory, that there is nothing, no. Where the compromise comes in is, we are, if given a freedom, it's quite unfortunate, I'm a little tongue-tied even saying this, given the freedom, we are the first people to misuse the freedom. This is a habit. We don't know why we do it, we become a habit. Initial stages, the compliance or the enforcement was very strong. People started, you know, feeling the heat and making a big noise. Some were genuine. Some were, of course, doubtful. So all of them started shouting together. So what happened? The government started filtering it down. Probably a political reason also, because that will become unpopular. And now because of that, what has happened is, I find that there is a, slowly, GST evasions are also taking place. There is no room under the GST not to make a bill. Because if previously, central excise used to pass through the gate, commercial taxes used to come from after collections. So some few taxes used to evade. Now it's not like that. Now if you evade GST, the concrete thing is little huge. So their government, again, there also, from a civil breach to a criminal breach, they have brought in, but slackened on enforcement. That is the unfortunate thing. For example, I'll give you one more example is, you find that Ullampulla opened the e-commerce industry. 70%, 80% discount. 70%, 80% discount. How can you give that kind of a discount? It's just imagination, beyond imagination. They're going scot-free. Refurbished systems are coming into play. And that are not being bought. So these things, if they're a little tighten it, I think India's got the best system, and hats off for a country with such kind of this thing, bringing this kind of a reform is unthinkable. Therefore, you brought in the Gabbar tax, all that. I pity Rahul Gandhi, poor thing. He should not be talking on subjects which he does not know, number one. Number two, this Gabbar tax and all that, it makes good comedy. Number three, this tax, you cannot bring it back to the old system. So you let live policy. You also make money and give me money. Both will be this. That policy cannot arrive. That is gone. So it will stick on. My lightly tinkering here and there and saying, this is mine. That can happen. That is not a matter of worry at all.
Absolutely. And so I think that is very pertinent to kind of look at this uniformity homogenization is a word often used by the opposition and various other intellectuals, various people who try to kind of, you know, trivialize this importance of creating a uniform framework. And cutting through this middle level clutter, right, which was something that had been present across the board. I mean, License Raj, for instance, of the Congress era, there was, even in other areas, for instance, in manufacturing and agriculture, there have been discussions as to how to kind of remove the importance of the middlemen altogether. And that has directly everything to do with the welfare, the existence of the citizens of the country, and how they kind of work with the system as such. Connected to this, and moving a little away from the economic aspect of things, is of course the idea of the welfare schemes, the way in which we look at different kinds of policies that we have in the country today. So the opposition coalition have been screaming that democracy is in danger and it has to be saved. We have seen how they have joined together to obstruct parliament with unruly behavior. And we saw that in both the houses, they attracted suspension, which was, at a level which was unprecedented. They didn't quite contribute much substantial to the discussions with any semblance of a constructive debate. And there have been instances of fear mongering and confusion, which has been created on issues cutting across from, for instance, the CA, where there has been discussion, or rather this false pointer put forward that the citizenship of certain citizens will be revoked, which is categorically untrue. So what's more threatening, however, is that the federal structure of a constitution has been bypassed, has been flouted in a manner of speaking. For instance, West Bengal, which was, again, a part of our discussion in one of the episodes of Satya Samvad, hasn't allowed various kinds of central welfare schemes to reach targeted beneficiaries, the Ayushman Bharat, for instance. And paradoxically, misusing the plank of federalism for political convenience, Congress has stated in their manifesto that they will give more power to the states if they come to power, while also speaking in the same breath of arbitrarily dismissing the elected government of Manipur, for instance. So all of this, how do you see this evolving, moving forward, and how dangerous is this for the structure and the functioning of the democracy of India?
What a wonderful subject that is of interest to me. Thank you very much for that. See, all this comes out of what? When you say this particular thing, I bring back one of the things that as a student I have come across. I was fascinated. I don't mind saying that publicly, even if some it means some kind of this. There used to be in a parliamentary constituency called Gonda in Uttar Pradesh. There was a first time MP called Nanaji Deshmukh. I don't know how many of them have heard. He was purely a service-minded person. Of course, he belonged to the BJP, that's a different thing. Being service-minded, he was aghast that there are so many schemes in the country that people don't even know about it. So he's the one who suggested after 60, retire from politics, serve society, and he started by the schemes. He started for some time a methodology to involve it and reach out these schemes to the public and all that. That is one part of what he could do, which obviously is not institutionalized and therefore it dies by itself. This is where I wanted somehow this should reach the government. I'll tell you how. All this happens because of the fact that there is ignorance. Add to the fact that in Tamil Nadu, in Singh, you are approaching the beneficiary. All these beneficiaries, the fear mongering that you are saying. What is it that they fear? The government that is doing this good work. If it reaches out to the public would get captivated and we can never come to power. This is the mindset under which these things are being opposed. Now, if you look at that, the government is still during elections, they come out and say, we have done this Ayushman Bharat, we have done this. See, for example, one of the schemes in Karnataka is to give free rations to 5 kgs to the BPL card holders. Now they have enhanced it to 10 kgs. It's 10 kgs, they could not give the 10 kgs, 5 kgs are to be bought from outside. 5 kgs central government is giving. They are not willing to say it is central government which is giving. They make it their own. Because economically, it is not feasible to, for them to show, or they don't have the money to purchase that kind of thing and claim as their benefit scheme, the welfare scheme. Similarly, in the case of Didi, what she does is, she does not want people to believe, get Ayushman cursing, in spite of the fact that it is a welfare scheme benefiting the people and depriving that. Similarly, the Kisan benefit, which is a 6,000, hardly anything, but she deprives them. So all this is happening on what score? Because the beneficiaries should not know that anything is done. It is mere politics. How can you break that? The government can do a major kind of, they need not spend any money. Simple as that. As you are aware, the government's mindset or the people's mindset has been slowly attuned to what? They feel that some of the NGOs, truly I am also part of that movement, I also subscribe to that, I agree to that. I'm not saying no. Many NGOs who come in the garb of NGOs, siphon out money, they are worse than political parties. So, but, you know, naming or terming every NGO who, that belongs to that is dangerous. So you have a huge swell of consumer organizations, public-spirited organizations. You take out genuine organizations from them. Make them work for you. See to it, for example, I'll tell you, what you brought out wonderfully is, this is a very good question. Mamata Banerjee repeatedly says, I haven't got money for MNREGS. Now, finance ministry is repeatedly saying, I have given you whatever it is. Gone are the days when, you know, people don't understand what he's talking about. Prime Minister says that there are dead people. There are people who are not born. You are giving the money to them. People don't understand what he's talking. See, you create, you need money. For example, we'll take at some point in time about the bonds also. You need money to run the organization. Who does not recruit? And nobody wants to put their money to do what they wanted to do in this thing. They wanted to take out money from there. So in this bargain, what they try to do is, they want to somehow, MNREGS is there. It is very easy to, you know, siphon out funds. And that is exactly what Rajiv Gandhi said. If I send 1 rupee, only 15 paise reaches to the people. So that thing can happen when you don't have. And for that sake, you cannot employ supervisory. You cannot put everybody into the thing and stop that. That will be expensive. Involve civil society organizations. Involve them in the thing, verification process, whether it is reaching out or not. And they become independent. Now, whether it is Mamata Banerjee or DMK or for that matter a Congress government, they better not take on the NGOs. We know how to be independent of them. They can't get the better of us. We'll stand by whatever is truthful. That will make them more effective. In the sense, we will create awareness to the public. We will tell them that these schemes are there. As I told you, how I came into the thing. If you you don't do any rocket science or teach Vedas, you tell the public that, look, there is an Ayushman scheme. It is, you are eligible. As a standalone basis, you are not antagonizing anybody. You are not doing anything wrong. Put forth whatever is the scheme given by the central government. Place it before the public. Be a kind of a connect. You want a problem? I will solve it. I will clarify. By doing this, what happens is, he becomes an enlightened citizen. Empowered person. Empower them. If you empower them, they will get back to that. No government need do anything else. There are two things, awareness and make standing by them. You have a problem, come back to me. I will fight it out and get it. There are courts, there are other methods to make them make it happen. I have, incidentally, I wanted to tell you, this food and civil supplies. I have studies with me to show it to you how filtration takes place. If I tell you something, you will be shocked. You know what is the population of Karnataka? It's 6 crores. You know how much is the BPL card? 1.5 crores. They are all below poverty line. It doesn't match anywhere at all. Government still gives on this basis only, because the data provided by the state, the government is supplying. So what do? They flip on the eligibility. They put all and sundry. So if you weed out all this, how can you weed out? I will give you a foolproof method by which this can be, you can weed out the system, cleanse the system, involve people into it, so that you put it into a right corner and you'll see nothing will happen. And I'm not saying that it's not something that government has not done. To an extent, they have achieved it. For example, some of these schemes like gas subsidy, to be a huge problem. Previously, when Manmohan Singh government was supposed to be going, if you had recollected, or at that point of time, we still was discussed whether a household should get 9 cylinders or 12 cylinders. Where is the discussion now? Nobody is discussing whether 9 or 12 cylinders. Why? So therefore, what is happening is silent transformation's name, silent revolution. And if at all, if Modiji had said, I am removing the subsidy, huge nationwide galata would have taken. He didn't do anything of the sort. He just appealed to people to give up your subsidy. All those who have to give up your subsidy, please give it up. Because what I am going to do is, I am not going to take it and make a profit out of that. This particular subsidy that you are going to give up, I am going to take it away from you and give it to the poorest of poor women who deserve it. So he made it a social cause. And how did it happen? People gave up the subsidy. Nobody wanted the subsidy here. Chalta hai. So how did the transformation take place? So these are something, and this Prime Minister granted to him. For example, how he handled the COVID that way, announcing on 5th of August that, listen, beware, light a candle. In every public, this thing where he wanted citizens to come forward and do something, his clarion call has worked. So he must now, all this and other business and all, it's technology. I am not going to talk about technology here. Involvement of, you weed out, you don't antagonize genuine people who want to work for the country. Now you are making a mistake by even antagonizing or putting everybody into one bracket and saying all NGOs are bad. That way you are only increasing those who are against you. Instead of that, weed out, all are not bad, some are bad, some good, bad, let them stay. Those who are genuine, who want to work for the country, come along, participate in my this thing. Come along with me. That way, if you make use of them, this thing also will completely evaporate. The schemes can be sold, the schemes can be conveyed to people, only making them aware. giving them knowledge will fulfill this and give you result. That is what can happen for any government, that matter. Presently, it is the Modi government. For any government, involving its citizens, citizens becoming aware, that is the panacea for all the things. If now what is happening is, you don't have a feedback system. It's all coming from top. It is not going bottoms up. If it goes from bottoms up, if these two come together, then you will hear the sound loud and clear. That is what has to happen.
Yeah, and that's very important that the civil, you know, movements, civil organizations, civil society organizations, how they are involved as an additional reinforcer of sorts of various different measures and policies. But a natural question, a brief detour of sorts, or a brief question that is connected to what you just said. The whole idea of how the FCRA regulations, for instance, recently has been spoken about, and there have been NGOs, there are movements that I'm aware of, even in the West, which are working very closely with certain kind of blocs that have agendas in place, and they obviously want to make a mark within India as well. So the way to kind of vet and you know, clear through this kind of grouping of these organizations that can be against the national interests. How do you see, for somebody who's such a seasoned and well-known civil society activist, how do you see us moving towards this balance where we do harness the power of civil society movements, but also are protected against certain such organizations that are working against national interests?
See, this comes out of, once you interact, you know, today it is they versus me, that kind of. If it becomes we, together we start working, then you will be able to really make up. You'll be able to, the system will take care of itself. Amongst their us itself, I will feel edgy about somebody who is not doing the things properly. I don't want him to spoil the muck here and spoil the, you know, dirty the mud. So I will like to eject it out. And within no time, you'll find that you can really find out who are the genuine people who are all doing it for other purposes. That you have to start weeding out only by experience. That cannot be done out of, you know, any scheme you want. You right. Just say, okay, submit a balance sheet, 1, 2, 3, 4, I'll give you photocopy. Right. That's not the way. Only after interaction, when you give them work, see, when you start involving them, their performance can be evaluated. That performance evaluation, when a team is done, you will find automatically is tremendous amount of. See, for that is the only thing that strikes me, because how else can you rein in? Can Modi ji rein in Mamata, or can Mamata can be wished off? Both are not possible. I mean, the democratic system, both has to exist. Now, the via media is public should not suffer. The public should not suffer. This is the way. Absolutely. You make the citizens, Are Baba, look, you are getting the benefit. Somshekhar in Karnataka is getting the benefit. Agarwal in Delhi is getting the benefit. Our Mrityunjaya is staying in Dehradun is getting the benefit. Why not you? That question, when it comes, he becomes the force multiplier.
Right.
He will start getting a more and more this thing and ask why I should not get it. That nobody can avoid. Here the question of Modi does not come in. Here the question of government does not come in. It kicks in very nicely because you automatically become a kind of...
My
object,
yes,
in the cooperative movement, when I made a presentation long time back, they asked me, one of them, of course, unfortunately, in this movement, when you find, there are a lot of leftist organizations, you have to admit. They come with a very sincere mind to work in this particular thing. All that is there. The leftist ideology they have worked for, the downtrodden, they have leave them alone on that. You have to handle that very carefully. But when you do that kind of a thing, what happens actually is, what is it that you are objectively saying? Involving them, because there is no wishing away. You can't throw them off. They are citizens of this country.
Right.
Their numbers should not increase. So they should be sidelined. They should be weeded out in a very methodical way. That you involve the entire thing. So that is possible in every other way through the cooperative movement. You build a cooperative movement in such a way, you incentivize, you monetize, and make people benefited by that. They will take care of all these fringe elements, I would call, who are trying to trouble and all that. They will automatically vanish.
Right.
There are methods for that. I'm telling you, beautiful systems available. If we create that atmosphere, I think India will go somewhere else. We have a lot of potentials.
Right. So bring the discussion around, you mentioned that, you know, about the way in which we are looking at scientific kind of organization of the elections. And we live in a in the age of information, in the technology age. And something which is very close to my heart is the usage or the harnessing of technology for better democratic practices for improving the democratic experience. So for instance, there was a certain kind of essay or a certain kind of thinking along the lines of collaborative e-governance, which was something that I had looked at in the recent past in terms of how one could have, if not a referendum, but at least a manner of feedback, of a reflexive way of interacting with the citizens on point-to-point basis for having decentralization of power and agency as much as possible, and more of a participation of the citizens themselves. So I would like to know from you, both in the context of representative democracy as it stands, and the exercise that we are moving into the general elections of India in 2024, and the brilliant way in which the Election Commission of India has formulated and is organizing it, as well as the other possibilities, the potential for the usage of technology for better democratic practices, for more dharmic or for more kind of civilizationally founded and moored kind of ways of doing things. How do you see us going forward with it?
That, I missed talking about it, but you brought it back in another way. It is wonderful. That is, how you are talking about recall of the sick.
Yes.
And what you are now talking about is how technology has to be utilized. I heard how this government or the political party to which it belongs, the BJP, I cannot claim any authenticity to this, but I am privy to the idea to a very great extent. When they distributed tickets, almost 100 to 100 plus MPs have been omitted from contesting.
Yes.
They have themselves spurned it. It is not pick and choose and lottery and all that. How did they do it? Internally, they have done 2-3 kind of surveys, which is probably what you are trying to talk about in the e-governance. They have collected information of how popular is your MP, have you been able to interact with him, has he worked for you. These kind of evaluations have gone into taking this bold decision that, look, we just have to sit out for this particular match and we'll see you later. That is one way of looking at it. The other way, I have heard in the US it happens, I don't know how far effective that is now. The governor, our own people in India, Indian people also, they participate in American kind of this thing. How? they have a right to write to the representative. India, with Modi ji's creativity, he can bring that. He can make it in such a way, powerfully, that he can write to our MP on the prevailing bills. The bills that are introduced in Parliament, put it into the public domain. This is going to be discussed in Parliament. And you will be eligible to give your opinion through your representative. Plus or minus, I mean, he wants to take it or not take it and all that, he's monitored. He's aware that there is an active pressure on him, that people are looking forward to him discussing the thing. It is not that one MP who perhaps you know better from West Bengal was paid, posted in several other countries to ask questions. She asked questions by 52 to 60% of her questions were posed by somebody else. Then she claimed that it was not my computer, that her inquiry is going on. You make that as the thing. Let the MPs be told that, listen, your opinion also, you have to see how much of participation is being done. I told you how it is evaluated. That to an extent, I feel is not good for the people, because for the good for the MPs, because the MPs don't know that you're doing something in your back. Instead, please tell him, you have to be present in all the social media and other kind. You have to collate and be grounded to the people. If people are telling you something, and that has to be raised in Parliament, then it will be a very strong, effective democracy. You know, this will answer your question of how e-governance, that you go to the last mile, people then will take interest.
Absolutely.
You know, he or she will take interest. And today, for example, I remember when we followed your job, what kind of criticism Prime Minister had when he introduced the thing post-demonetization, he said, go digital. What kind of this thing were put up? That, you know, rural man just does not know how to operate. Network will not be there. Look at the transformation. Today, you go to a grocery shop, that lady says, I don't have the change. No, sir, you use phone pay. You use Google Pay. She tells you. She may not know what is an app, what is a phone pay or Google Pay. But she knows all that she knows. Her amount is getting... How beautifully you have brought it into the banking system. The majority of people are honest. Majority of our people are sincere. Our country has got the best of the thing. That... which we should cherish. There are, as I told you, a very minuscule minority who are not aspirant about all this, who don't want their country to be seen forward. They will still call it as, you know, progressive country. We are still coming up. You know what? How that happens here? How it happens there? Those days are gone now. Those days are gone. I've gone, visited abroad. I've come back. I've seen Singapore. I've seen US. It doesn't fascinate me. My India is getting much better. All of you come back. I tell my children also, please come back. India is flourishing. India is really shining. Motivate them. And where we are going to go in the next, this thing, I sincerely anticipate there will be leaps and bounds we will grow. I'm looking forward to that. And that is e-governance taking up in a very big way. Young people like you coming up and this thing. And last word, if I have to say, the Prime Minister talks the language of a youth in yesterday's gaming kind of thing. He has called a few, six, seven people who don't even know that he follows them. That somewhere, where, when, nobody knows how he does that. And I was watching the interviews. They say that suddenly we got a call, young people. And he talks the language that, you know, many of the things that I have done. He talks the way we transact and we talk in our colloquial way. And what? 10 out of 10. And he says that, I've got gray hairs. He wants to be young. So, if you have an aspirational prime minister who can give everything to the nation, make use of it. And everyone should participate. It is not, you may be in whichever profession, whatever way. Involve yourself. Involve in getting it. Even the 20 crore people who are members of the team actively collaborate and not expect anything in return. I, for one, I am there to give out my best in whatever way I can for the country. Not expecting anything. No, nothing need be given to us. We got enough. God has given us great things.
Yes,
so that way, if you try and operate, I think all this can happen automatically. And e-governance is the future. See, give it to me that you give an opinion. We'll give an opinion. No problem. Why not?
And I think that is where the participatory aspect comes out in a much, much bigger way, because it is multidimensional, right? I mean, even today, for instance, obviously there is, you know, social media, there are various kinds of analytic tools, as well as entities that are working with the government very closely in terms of consultancy, in the mode of consultancy, and the way in which the churning of data is happening, right? The big data, as we call it, the analytics thereof, that is also helping in understanding the ground realities in real time or in a certain period of time. And that is how we kind of can become a more informed democracy, a more kind of dynamic democracy that is grounded in truth rather than in perspectives or ideologies necessarily. And that is of great importance as we go along. So, sir, it has been a wonderful conversation. Any parting words for our viewers today?
Ultimately, it is not bystanders. We have to get involved. You have to, like what Gandhiji said, be the change that you want to see. Unless you do that, there is no opportunity that is going to be dropped. If you are going to while away your time, then afterwards, repenting about it is not going to help. So now is the opportunity. Make the best of it. And there are plenty of challenges. Challenges are going to be extremely difficult also for the country, because we have got an envious environment. When my country, you know, I'll take, for example, the COVID times, no? Lakhs of people, we were estimated 25 lakh people will die in India. We hardly lost that kind of lives. Whereas the world over, when you saw what was happening, unbelievable. How did we withstand? That itself is a story. How did we withstand? Each time you had an alert, agile, active prime minister who would come out and say, look, listen, participate with me, be careful. Don't do this, don't do that. We just follow that. We are automatically fed into that system. And we follow. Similarly, when you have that kind of a methodology, you know, we have a wonderful time and this energy to capture this. This is an opportunity. It's a golden opportunity. Come our way. I think each of us has to use. And the kind of demographic dividend that we have got in India, you look at it in every aspect of it. There is another concept which I think will finish it off in saying, Prime Minister had said before the election, even before 2014, it is worth These are things that are untried, unimaginable. You know, for example, people are saying about this, come Ram Navami, the way Ayodhya is going to be filled in. It's huge, the crowds, the people and all that. Now, how does that happen? I'm not bringing spirituality into that. When you go into Ayodhya, look at the economic benefits of a poor man there. A flower seller, ordinary kind of thing. How his life improves manifold. You can't push that kind of a consumer into that. Go and purchase this, go and purchase that. It'll look artificial. But now automatically, everybody is benefited. Ayodhya will be benefited. Ayodhya will develop. Similarly, look at the same thing that happened when he did this Loha Purush, that statue of Sardar Vallabhbhai Patel. When he constructed it, people were saying, oh, huge. I remember some of my other friends also. It's stupidity. Huge iron statue. How will it happen? This is going to happen. Now, nobody is talking about it. Why? Because it's self-sufficient. Whatever has been spent on the amount to construct it has been recovered. And people are finding a place to as a tourist spot and all. Like what Prime Minister says now, the 10, 15 spots. Why do you want to go to other countries? Go within the country itself. Connectivity is there. Infrastructure is there. Facilities are there. So, all this which is happening, which further cannot be spoken of, but has to be experienced. That is important. And that will be a game changer. See, for example, we wanted to have a thing. I was telling you what Modi ji was saying. Our music is something very unique. Small, the children that are coming up, Saregamapa, Indian Idols, 3-4 years kids, 7-8 year kids, you know, they kindle your thing. The way they have come up is wonderful. This has to be showcased. If you go to US and all that, you find a lot of things they showcase on, and they talk very highly of certain kind of proof that is a talent. India's talent is bursting to its seeds. Its cuisines, your poha, your idli, your bisibele bhat, in whatever form your kind of all the foods that are eaten in India are unique to the world. Have a food festival around the world. See the amount of foreign this thing that is going to come. It's phenomenal. And it doesn't cost you that much as to creating a motor vehicle or creating a huge kind of thing. No, all that question does not arise. This is a talent within you. Explore it. So, all this. Once again, I wanted to pick up the thing. What he used to mention. These ambassadors sitting in all the countries. What is their portfolio? What are they supposed to be doing? So, in a year, if they are asked to do Indian festivals, Indian kind of the thing, bring a mix of talent, bring a Indian show, and bring tourists into the country, that itself will take care of our economy in a very big way, I'm talking about. So people can't understand this conceptually, but put into action, it'll be wonderful.
Absolutely, sir. So as Somashekhar ji has so beautifully put it, the major message that we can take from here is that not to be bystanders, of course, and when given an opportunity to be to be the focal point, rather, and he has very kindly asked us to share with all our viewers this opportunity through his organization to be a part of this greater movement. And so if you have liked this interaction, this episode of Satya Samvad and want to contribute in national development for a Vikasit Bharat, Then he has proposed this formation of a team of 5 members within your respective districts and getting in touch with Shri Somashekhar ji. We will be providing the contact details in the description to this video. And to learn about the secret of what he calls as Panchshil, Panchamrit, Panchang, and Panchatantra, or rather being the change you wish to see in the world in these various ways. So I would like to close today's conversation, today's rather interesting discussion, with an extension of a slogan, which is not for necessarily political reasons, but rather for a civilizational call to make ours a more democratic nation, a more democratic society, which is that of Sabka Saath, Sabka Vikas, but also Sabka Prayas. So with this, we would like to end to today's session of Satya Samvad, and we look forward to having you next time. Namaskar.
Thank you very much.